In the week after Election Day, life returned to normal for most Ohioans and many Americans across the country. People returned to their jobs as usual, and kids went to school, restaurants and banks and gas stations were open for business, and save for a general pall and malaise that seemed to grip many people's spirits, it would have appeared to the casual observer that the 2004 election had come and gone like a seasonal holiday, and that the population had universally reconciled its collective conscience to 4 more years of the present administration. In Columbus, Ohio, just 5 days before the election, a Kerry campaign concert featuring musician Bruce Springsteen drew an estimated 50,000 people. In many neighborhoods, voters were visited by canvassers and called by get-out-the-vote campaigners several times a day for a week. Where was the energy and the optimism that emboldened so many people to stand in line? And where was the indignation of the tens of thousands of voters who were disenfranchised on Election Day and whose voting rights were suppressed? But while the people in the heartland seemed disheartened, one needed only to scratch the surface to reveal a cauldron of anger and the beginnings of a new resistance movement.
In January, you still got the choice. You can cut the weeds before they start to bud. If you leave them to grow high, they'll silence your voice. And in December, you may pay with your blood. So close your eyes, stop your ears, close your mouth, take it slow. Let others take the lead and you bring up the rear, and later you can say you didn't know. Every day another vulture takes flight. There's another danger born every morning. In the darkness of your blindness, the beast will learn to bite. How can you fight if you can't recognize a warning? So close your eyes, stop your ears, close your mouth, take it slow. Let others take the lead and you bring up the rear, and later you can say you didn't know.
Where do we want it?
Now!
Where do we want it?
Justice!
And we
wish
it
now!
In everything! Where do we want it?
Now!
The next weekend, the first of many public hearings was organized by the Citizens Alliance for Secure Elections to take sworn testimony from voters and observers who described a wide range of difficulties they witnessed or experienced on Election Day. Hundreds of Ohio voters told of having been denied their franchise by misinformed poll workers, malfunctioning voting machines, mysterious clerical errors, and outright intimidation and misdirection. What follows is a montage of some of their testimonies.
At least 30 voters, after voting, came over to our stand and complained to us that they felt harassed by poll workers who kept yelling, "You only get 5 minutes, vote." In 4 different cases, I personally took people back into the polling place because they came out after waiting 2 to 3 hours and reported to us that they were not permitted to vote.
When I arrived in Reynoldsburg, Ohio, to vote, Precinct D, I was told immediately, I mean, everyone else is walking in and out, no ID, but I was told immediately that I was on a predetermined list that I was to be challenged. I was asked for my ID, and upon showing the lady my ID, she said, "Well, I'm sorry, you won't be able to vote today." She then asked me if I had a utility bill, and the only thing I had was my driver's license, and I had printed off a copy of my voter's registration from the Franklin County Board of Elections, which I have here. I showed her my voter's registration. She said, "No, that wasn't good enough. I needed a utility bill." I left the line, went out, searched my car for anything. I didn't have a bill, and most people wouldn't. I then called the Franklin County auditor because I just paid $500. And I asked him, fortunately, I was voting at a school. I asked him if he would fax me a receipt. And I went in, asked the school office if they would let me receive a fax. So I got a faxed bill from Franklin County auditor. And the lady looked at that, looked at my ID, looked at my registration, and said, again for the third time, she was sorry that I wouldn't be able to vote. I could go home. I wasn't offered a provisional ballot or anything.
I can tell you this, we bought pizzas for people. We bought lots and lots of water, snacks. And at 7:30, there were at least 150 people sitting in the auditorium still waiting to vote. On the 4 machines they had, we figured that they could handle about 41 people an hour.
I pushed John Kerry, and my vote immediately jumped up to George Bush. After I started screaming about them cheating again, the aide hurried up and came over and said, "Oh, That's been happening a lot. Just go on and push John Kerry again. And I'm saying, you say that's been happening a lot and it hasn't been corrected. Yes, but we can't do anything about it.
Once it was my turn, I got inside and looked over the voting machine. And this was one of the electronic voting machines. It consisted of an array of blinking lights urging you to vote for something. And once you did vote for something, the blinking light would go out and a steady red light would appear next to your selection. On the upper left-hand part was the selection for president. I wanted to do this. I wanted to get this out of the way. That's what I came here to vote. That was my number one priority. So I pushed the button for John Kerry for president of the United States. And the light, the flashing light went out, and the light next to John Kerry's name came on. I then mulled over the rest of the propositions and local races. Once I was finished, I got down to the lower right-hand corner, and the big green vote button was beckoning. I almost pushed it, and I said, no, wait a minute. I want to proofread what I just did. I want to look over my selections. I looked up into the upper left-hand corner, and the area for president of the United States was now flashing again. My vote for John Kerry had been neutralized. It had been reset. Now, you can call this a glitch. You can call this a design flaw. You can call it a bologna sandwich if you want. But whatever you call it, that machine nearly threw out and neutralized my vote for John Kerry. The thing I want to know is, what are we going to do about it? Because if we don't do something about this, I fear that the foundation of our very democracy, voting, is in peril.
In Franklin County, where voters in traditionally Democratic, urban and African-American, Latino, and working-class neighborhoods waited in line for an average of nearly 3 hours at the polling places, while in the affluent suburbs the waits were short or inconsequential, it became apparent that the number of voting machines assigned to each polling place was an issue.
Our volunteers arrived at the polling places between 6:50 and 7 p.m., 30 to 40 minutes before the polls closed, expecting to find long lines stretching out of the building. Instead, they were astonished to find poll workers in virtually vacant buildings standing around with nothing to do. In the course of the next half hour, the few people that came in to vote were on their way home within minutes. Because each of the four voting areas is located within a mile of each other, I drove to each of them between 6:50 and 7 p.m. and saw for myself that no lines existed at any of the polling places in our ward. How could this be possible? Upper Arlington, like the rest of Franklin County, had a huge turnout of voters. Approximately 71% of registered voters in UA had shown up to vote, an increase of 12% over the 2000 election. Yet at the end of the day, no lines existed. Back home at 8 p.m., I watched on TV how some areas of Franklin County still had long lines of people that were going to have to wait hours to vote. This could not have been an accident. In my affluent, predominantly Republican community, where 62% of the people voted for George Bush in the 2000 election, lines were not a problem. In Ward 6, where I worked, every precinct had three or four voting machines, which works out to one voting machine for every 164 people who voted. Yet, late on election night, the news programs continued to show people in Franklin County and other parts of the states waiting in line to vote hours after the polls had closed. It appeared that these lines were primarily in low-income, student, or minority communities, areas that consist predominantly of Democratic voters.
Sure.
The only conclusion I can draw from this is there was an intentional effort to usher Republican voters through relatively short lines to ensure they cast their vote, while creating excessively long lines in Democratic areas to suppress their right to vote by ensuring some people would leave without voting because they were incapable standing in lines for 3 or 4 hours long, or they had to get to work.
This reporter was able to obtain a copy of an invoice from the county records that showed that the private shipper used by the Board of Elections to deliver its inventory of 2,901 voting machines to its 788 precincts delivered less than that number of machines prior to Election Day. That meant that the Board of Elections actually held back nearly 100 voting machines. Ohio Democratic Party Chair Bill Anthony, who was appointed by Republican Secretary of State Ken Blackwell to head the State Board of Elections, made this candid admission when confronted on a local radio program by Columbus Free Press editor Bob Fitrakis.
The problem is that if you conduct an election when you need 5,000 machines with, you know, you put out 2,741, you're going to have problems.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at where those machines were distributed, go to the freepress.org. You'll find that they were shorted in the inner cities.
Mm-hmm.
And the broader question is, why didn't they put out, according to their own documents, 68 machines?
Okay. Mr. Anthony, well, all right. Well, Bob, thank you very much. Let me answer your allegations. We absolutely took machines out of some black areas and a lot of white areas. We had to, Bob. There was no other way around it. But we use E.E. Ward, the minority trucking firm, to deliver all our machines about 4 weeks out. We started delivering machines to all these polling locations so that we would be ready for the election. So they delivered them all out in that 4 weeks prior to the election. Now, we always hold back a truckload, which is about 75 machines, in case there's a truck accident.
And, Bob, what was your contention?
No, I mean, he's pretty much admitting to what I said, is that they didn't put 68 of them up.
A Pacifica radio survey of one working-class precinct in Columbus's Linden area revealed that more than 20% of the voters contacted there were actively denied their opportunity to vote. That is to say that more than 20% of the voters in Precinct 1024A made some physical effort to cast their ballots, but were deterred in some way. There are 1,244 voters registered in that precinct, according to the Franklin County Board of Elections. If the number of voters whose votes were suppressed there is multiplied by the number of precincts in that county with similar demographics, the statistical inference suggests that in Franklin County alone, more than 60,000 votes were never received in precincts where the Democratic candidate was strongly favored. Affidavits obtained from voters at hearings held in the Cleveland and Cincinnati areas indicated similar patterns. But suppression was not the only factor that may have skewed Ohio's election results in favor of George Bush. Columbus attorney Cliff Arnebeck assembled a legal team that included Bob Fitrakis and Citizens Alliance for Secure Elections co-founder Susan Truitt to draft a legal challenge to Ohio's election results. Arnebeck held a press conference on the steps of the Ohio Supreme Court building in mid-November to announce their action.
In terms of the complaint that's going to be filed, we are going to be alleging under information and belief that when the votes are accurately counted in the judicial context, that the vote will swing in the presidential race instead of being showing Bush ahead by 130-some thousand votes. It will show Kerry ahead by 130,000 votes. In the course of, once we file the litigation, aggressive discovery will proceed and we'll get to the truth. I want to reemphasize once again that the purpose here is not partisan. The purpose here is not destructive toward anyone. And we invite all candidates, we invite the Bush campaign and the Kerry campaign, to join and cooperate in a nonpartisan effort to find the truth, gather the facts, and assure the public and assure both candidates that this is an honest election. And we should all recognize in that regard that our presidential election affects not just this country, but all the citizens of the world. And therefore, it's absolutely essential that the person who assumes the mantle of that office have the full confidence of our public and the world community that it was an honest election. And that is our effort to assure.
The Reverend Jesse Jackson soon took an interest and made a series of visits to Ohio to rally support for the contest of election lawsuit and for the Green Party's demands for a statewide recount. Reverend Jackson's Rainbow Push Coalition also co-sponsored a statewide rally and evening forum in Columbus on December 4th, which together drew more than 2,000 people locally, and which were broadcast live on participating Pacifica and Pacifica affiliate radio stations from coast to coast. The events included investigative journalists Greg Palast and Lynn Landis, Greg Moore from the NAACP's national office, and Congressperson Sheila Jackson Lee from Houston, Texas.
Let me recount for you so that you can remember from whence we've come and see if this rings a bell. 4 years ago, now we're 2004, when we went to Florida, these are the concerns that we had. Let me see if any of these are sort of ringing in your ear, that citizens who were properly registered were denied the right to vote because election officials could not find their names on the precinct rolls. Does that ring a bell? That registered voters were denied the right to vote because of minor discrepancies and clerical errors. Does that ring a bell? That first-time voters who sent in voter registration forms prior to the state's deadline for registration were denied the right to vote because their registration forms were not processed. Does that ring a bell? That African-American voters were singled out for criminal background checks at some precincts, and that one voter who had never been arrested was denied the right to vote after being told they had a prior felony conviction. Do you think that might have happened? That African-American voters were required to show photo identification, while white voters at the same precincts were not subjected to the same requirement. Well, let's just take it a next step for Ohio. That African-American voters were subjected to long lines with no voting machines that weren't working. Does that ring a bell? That voters were having to stand in line 6, 10, 11 hours at a time in the rain. Does that ring a bell? That voters who requested absentee ballots did not receive them, but were denied the right to vote when they went to the precinct in person on election day. Does that ring a bell? Here we are again. And that means that we cannot repeat one more time. Let me say these words of Langston Hughes. As they say, I came here to be of support, and even though my time and words are short, I hope that you will perceive that my heart is large and that my mind and my breath and the depth of my commitment is deep. Langston Hughes said, freedom will not come today, this year, nor ever, through compromise and fear. I have as much right as the other fellow has to stand on my own 2 feet and own the land. I tire so of hearing people say, let things take their course. Tomorrow is another day. I do not need my freedom when I'm dead. I cannot live on tomorrow's bread. Freedom is a strong seed planted in the soil. I live here too. I want freedom just as you. Let me tell you, Ohio, you now are the patriots of the 13 colonies. You are now dumping the tea outside the Boston Harbor. You now are standing up against the Redcoats. You now are drawing together this little being, small, not so large nation that is trying to stand on its legs, the legs of freedom. And so if someone begins to call you a partisan, you just don't like Republicans. I'm not interested in Republicans or Democrats. I'm interested in America being able to vote and have their voice heard.
Working with journalists, volunteer organizers, and pro bono attorneys who flew in from many parts of the country, the legal team began an aggressive research campaign that soon uncovered a litany of electoral discrepancies and violations of Ohio's election laws at both the county and the state levels. Meanwhile, Secretary of State Blackwell refused to certify the election results in Ohio until December 6th, just one day before the so-called safe harbor date by which any legal challenge to the election must be filed. Ohio law also allows for a 5-day waiting period after the election is certified before any recount can begin. That meant that the Green Party's statewide recount could not get underway until December 13th, the very day that Ohio's delegates to the Electoral College were to cast their votes for George Bush.
Each elector places an X in the box by George W. Bush. The ballot must be marked and signed in ink.
We have determined there have been 20 votes cast for President George W. Bush and 20 votes cast for Vice President Dick Cheney.
Mm-hmm. But while Ohio's electors assembled at the State House, another assembly was taking place one block away at the City Council chambers, as the minority members of the House Judiciary Committee held the second of a series of congressional forums to investigate allegations of fraud and possible tampering in Ohio's election. The Reverend Jackson and the attorneys contesting the election made passionate presentations denouncing the many injustices they cited in their lawsuit and calling upon Congress to delay certification of the electoral votes until further investigation could be conducted. Green Party candidate David Cobb was also one of the presenters, and in one of the forum's more dramatic moments, he read aloud from an affidavit submitted by an election board official in Hocking County who complained that a technician from the vote tabulation service provider, Triad, had disassembled the county's tabulating computer and had swapped out its hard drive just prior to the recount there.
A representative from Triad Systems came into this county's Board of Election office unannounced. He then headed into the back room where the Triad supplied tabulator, that is, the machine that counts the ballots, is kept. This Triad representative told them that there was a problem with the system, that the system had a bad battery and had, quote, lost all its data. He then took the computer apart and started swapping parts in and out of it. He then asked which precinct would be counted in the 3% recount test, and the one which had been selected as if it had the right number of votes was relayed to him. He then went back and did something else to the tabulator.
This prompted Conyers' committee to send a letter to Triad inquiring about its conduct. The following week, a public meeting was held at the Hocking County Board of Elections, where Triad officials defended their actions.
Michael Barbian did come into your office on Friday to set up the recount so that you would be fully prepared to conduct your recount. When he arrived, the computer was not working properly, so he had to take the necessary action to fix the computer so that he could then continue to set up the files for the recount so that you would be ready to go. It's a standard procedure for all the counties that we go to. There was only one difference in Hocking County. When he turned the computer was broke. And he had to fix the computer before he could continue on setting up the recount.
Recently, however, more questions have arisen concerning Triad's involvement in some of the other 40 Ohio counties where Triad software and personnel are used in the vote counting process. After more than a week of intensive scrutiny involving nearly 2,000 volunteers, the Green Party's recount drew to a close shortly before the December 25th holiday. Despite the discovery of many anomalies during the recount, including the appearance of more than 1,000 previously uncounted paper ballots in Coshocton County, the Secretary of State's office declared that the official vote tally after adjustments were made narrowed the 118,000-plus lead held by George Bush over John Kerry by only 300 votes. Cobb campaign manager Lynn Serpy, who coordinated the Green Party recount volunteers, explained that the recount effort was obstructed in many counties by local election boards who refused to comply with Ohio's election laws, and by the Secretary of State, who impeded the recount by denying access to critical public records.
Well, pretty much from the get-go, our observers started raising challenges, and that's because one of the first things a board is supposed to do is do a random selection of 3% of the precincts. And they're supposed to select whole precincts. And pretty much, I would say, 80 to 82 of the 88 counties did not randomly select. They chose precincts based on the size of the precinct, whether it had 500 voters or 300 voters. And our observers really recognize that by doing that, you really, not only did you thwart the intention of the law, if not actually downright break the law, because it said clearly random selection of 3%, but if someone who was interested in tampering with the election was aware that the boards would always make the selection based on size, it would be very easy for them to choose which precincts to tamper with and which precincts to leave alone. And so our volunteer observers were very concerned about that, and every single instance they raised their concerns to the boards. And pretty much in every single instance they were told, this is how we're going to do it. And so what our angle, if you call it that way, is with this inconsistent standards throughout the state and each board, that you're violating equal protection clauses.
As of this production, Secretary of State Ken Blackwell, along with George Bush, Dick Cheney, and Karl Rove, who are all named defendants in the contest of election suit, have failed to appear for scheduled depositions, and there is little hope that the Republican-dominated Ohio Supreme Court will compel them to comply. Blackwell also refused to appear before the House Judiciary Committee to answer questions submitted to him by Representative Conyers.
Now, no matter how much they protest, no matter how many lawsuits they file, I have the fullest of confidence in the integrity of our system.
January 6th is the day Congress meets to certify the votes of the Electoral College, but investigations into what many feel was a fraudulent election in Ohio will likely continue for some time, raising deep and enduring doubts about the integrity of the electoral process and the legitimacy of the office holders who benefited from it. This is Pacifica Radio correspondent Evan Davis for TUC Radio, with help from Linda Burkett, Penny Little, and Eliza Jane Schneider. This is Pacifica Radio correspondent Evan Davis for TUC Radio, with help from Linda Burkett, Penny Little, and Eliza Jane Schneider. www.caseohio.org or the Columbus Free Press at www.freepress.org.
The weeds are all around us and they're growing. It will soon be too late for the night. If you leave them on the wind that around the world is blowing, you may pay for your silence with your life. So close your eyes, stop your ears, close your mouth and never dare. And if it happens here, they'll never come for you, because they'll know you really didn't care.